रावण चारे यमुना ते रावण चारे जय राधा माधव कुंज विहारे जय ओम विष्णुपाद परमहंस परिव्राजकाचार्य अष्टोत्तर शत श्री श्रीमद हिज डिवाइन ग्रेस एसी भक्ति वेदांत स्वामी श्रील प्रभुपाद की जय अनंत कोटि वैष्णव वृंद की जय ग्रंथराज श्रीमद भागवतम की जय ऑल ग्लोरीज टू द असेंबल्ड डिवोटीज ऑल ग्लोरीज टू श्री श्री गुरु एंड गौरंगा नारायण नमस्कृत्य नरम चैव नरोत्तमम देवीं सरस्वतीं व्यासं ततो जयमुदीरयेत् नष्टप्रायेषु भद्रेषु नित्यं भागवत सेवया भगवती उत्तमश्लोके भक्तिर्भवति नैष्ठिकी ओम नमो भगवते वासुदेवाय ॐ नमो भगवते वासुदेवाय ॐ नमो भगवते वासुदेवाय श्रीमद् भागवतम कैंटो 7 चैप्टर 9 प्रह्लाद महाराज पैसिफाइज लॉर्ड नरसिंहदेव विथ प्रेयर्स Text 1. Shri Narada Uvacha Evam Suradaya Sarve Brahma Rudra Purasarah Nopaitum Ashakan Manyu Samrambham Sudha संब्रह्म सुदुरासदम् एवं सुरादयः सर्वे ब्रह्मरुद्रपुरःसराः नोपैतुम् अशकन् मन्युः संब्रह्म सुदुरासदम् एवं सुरादयः सर्वे Shri Narada Uvacha, the great saintly sage Narada Muni said, Evam, thus, Sura Adayaha, the groups of demigods, Sarve, all, Brahma Rudra Purasaraha, represented by Lord Brahma and Lord Shiva, Na, not, upaitum, to go before the Lord. Ashakan, able. Manyu samrambham, in a completely angry mood. Sudurasadam, very difficult to approach. Lord Nrsimhadev. Translation and purport by Srila Prabhupada Ki Jai. The great saint Narada Muni continued. The demigods headed by Lord Brahma, Lord Shiva, and other great demigods dared not come forward before the Lord, who at that time was extremely angry. Purport. Srila Narottam Das Thakur has sung in his Prema Bhakti Chandrika, Krodha Bhakta Dveshi Jane. Anger should be used to punish a demon who is envious of devotees. Kama, Krodha, Lobha, Moha, Mada, and Matsarya, lust, anger, greed, illusion, pride, and envy, all have their proper use for the Supreme Personality of Godhead and His devotee. A devotee of the Lord cannot tolerate blasphemy of the Lord or His other devotees, and the Lord also cannot tolerate blasphemy of a devotee. Thus, Lord Narsimhadeva was so very angry that the great demigods like Lord Brahma and Lord Shiva and even the goddess of fortune, who is the Lord's constant companion, could not pacify him, even after offering prayers of glorification and praise. No one was able to pacify the Lord in his anger, but because the Lord was willing to exhibit his affection for Prahlad Maharaj, all the demigods and others present before the Lord pushed Prahlad Maharaj forward to pacify him. Om Agyanatimirandhasya Gyananjana Shalakaya Chaksurun Militam Yena Tasmai Shri Gurave Namaha Shri Chaitanya Mano Vishtam Sthapitam Yena Bhutale Swayam Rupa Kadamahyam Dadati Svapadantikam Vancha Kalpatarubhyascha Kripa Sindhubhya Evacha Patitanam Pavanebhyo Vaishnavebhyo Namo Namaha Shri Krishna Chaitanya Prabhu Nityananda Shri Advaita Gadadhara Srivasadi Gora Bhakta Vrinda Hare Krishna 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 Hare 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 Rama 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 Hare Hare. Hare Krishna. So nice to see all of you. Happy to be back. I guess as in the course of the week now and coming weeks, I'll share with you bits and pieces that I guess I learned over the course of the last 3 weeks, mostly. It was part of the what's called the GBC College for Leadership Development. It was a very fascinating experience where there was a mixture of learning straight from Bhagavatam, different aspects, and hearing the different devotees and their realizations. And the other piece was, I guess, different tools and skills and different perspectives on leadership. That was really nice. And the association of great saintly persons was the highlight of it. Really amazing. So I hope to share in this forum and other forums as well. Now we have arrived at a chapter that is considered one of the most significant chapters, if not the significant, but one of the most significant chapters in the entire Bhagavatam. And Lord Chaitanya, with his associates, would hear this section of the Bhagavatam and the fourth canto, the Dhruva Maharaj's story, again and again. It is described that when Gadadhar Pandit would recite Bhagavatam every day for Lord Chaitanya, this was Lord Chaitanya's, I guess, schedule, if you will. This is too high. Manoj, can you turn it down a little bit? Lord Chaitanya Mahaprabhu would go to Jagannath Puri temple in the morning, take darshan, be in front of Lord Jagannath, and come to meet Haridas Thakur, because Haridas Thakur could not enter the temple, Lord Chaitanya would come to see him. And then he would go to meet Gadadhar Pandit, who was serving in the Tota Gopinath temple. And there, Lord Chaitanya Mahaprabhu would ask Gadadhar Pandit, please recite from Bhagavatam. And he would recite every day, and Chaitanya Mahaprabhu would sit there and hear. And when, suppose they said, Chaitanya Mahaprabhu said, please read from Prahlad Maharaj's section of the Bhagavatam, he would recite all the verses, this chapter, and when the pastime would be over, Chaitanya Mahaprabhu would say, please go back and start again. So Gadadhar Pandit would start all over again. He would finish it, and Chaitanya Mahaprabhu says, please start all over again. Because Chaitanya Mahaprabhu, because he is also Narsingadev, would constantly relish the depth of Prahlad Maharaj's devotional service. Again and again, again and again. One, because Prahlad was a young boy. So naturally, young boys or young children are very attractive in their innocence. They say things that are very sweet and cute. But beyond this, Prahlad Maharaj's depth, not just though he was a child, the depth with which he could speak and the realizations that he carried were so profound that it genuinely moved the heart of the Lord. That he wanted to hear those prayers again and again and again and again. So this chapter is where Prahlad Maharaj will be, as the purport says, he was nudged forward to appease Lord Narsingadev, because Narsingadev was so angry. The reason for his anger? Hiranyakashipu, who had offended his Lord Narsingadev's devotee. And so the Lord can tolerate anything, but cannot tolerate the blasphemy of his own devotee. And likewise, the devotee can tolerate anything, but not the blasphemy of the Lord or the Lord's devotees. So this anger is very special. Just yesterday, we were reading from Bhagavatam. In the 7th chapter, the first canto, where Arjuna is pursuing the son of Dronacharya, Ashwatthama. Because Ashwatthama, in the dead of night, cut off the heads of the sons of Draupadi, 5 children who were sleeping in a tent. This guy comes into in the night and chops off their heads. And in the morning he realizes, I made a big mistake, because Arjuna is so angry that he takes a vow. Draupadi, I will bring the head of the fellow who did this, and you can stand on his head and offer oblations to your dead sons. I promise you. So when Arjuna pursues Ashwatthama and brings him and ties him up like an animal, it is described that both Krishna and Arjuna were very, very angry. Arjuna's eyes were red, coppery red. And Krishna's eyes were filled with anger, but the phrase used is lotus eyes. And in that purport, Prabhupada distinguishes the anger between what the Lord carries and what a conditioned soul carries. Because Arjuna is playing the role of a conditioned soul, his eyes were coppery red with anger because it was his children who were killed. And Krishna, who's also very angry, but his eyes are described as lotus petals, because Krishna is absolute. His anger and his pleasure both benefit the object. So when Krishna is very pleased with someone, that person is very benefited. When Krishna is very angry at someone, that person is still benefited. This is the difference. Hiranyakashipu got benefit, that he was relieved from his material condition and revived back to his spiritual condition. Our anger pulls one down from spiritual condition into very material condition. It's the opposite effect. So Lord Narsingadev here, is in this very, very fiery mood. Have you ever had the experience when someone is very angry, it's very difficult to approach them? Very difficult to approach them. Because you don't know how they will react, what they might throw at you. Because anger is such a quality that if I'm angry at that person, everyone else who comes near me gets affected by it. They're drawn into that energy. If someone comes to tell me, suppose I'm angry at such and such person, someone says, oh, would you like some water? Don't disturb me right now. Even they become the object of that anger. So the demigods were very, very powerful persons, including Lord Brahma, Lord Shiva. They're afraid. Oh, we don't want to go anywhere near Lord Narsingadev. Lakshmi Devi, generally a female has the capacity to calm someone down. In Ramayana, when Lord Ramchandra was very, very upset with Sugriva, because they had a deal, Lord Ramchandra would help Sugriva kill Vali and give his kingdom back, and in return, Sugriva will send out an army in search of Sita Devi. You know this story? No. Okay, that was what was the deal. Lord Ramachandra said, I will first fulfill my part of the deal. And so he killed Vali and gave Sugriva the kingdom back. But what happened is that Sugriva, because now he became king, totally forgot his part of the deal. Thank you. And he was constantly intoxicated from morning till night. His eyes were rolling in their sockets, it's described. And he was just enjoying with the ladies like anything. And he had totally forgotten that now he's supposed to return the favor. Lord Ramachandra is patiently waiting for 4 months. Imagine the Lord wants to meet his consort, Sita Devi, who's been kidnapped. He's in a rush to find her. But he needs Sugriva's help. And Sugriva is in this real wanton sense gratification. And the Lord is very patiently waiting. Finally, the Lord says to Lakshmana, do something. And Lakshman is the angry type. He says, I will kill this Sugriva in one moment. And he walks to Sugriva's palace. And it's described when he walks with such a thump that the earth was trembling under Lakshman's anger. And the word goes to Sugriva, Lakshmana is coming. You're dead man. You're dead beat totally now. So they don't know what to do because no one can stop Lakshman's anger. Hanuman has an idea. Let's bring Tara Devi, your wife, to speak with Lakshmana because she can calm him down. So Tara Devi comes and says, oh, you know, after all, Sugriva is a monkey and he got a little carried away. But he's been planning to help you. Because she came, Lakshmana said, okay, all right, send him back quickly. So here Lakshmi Devi, who has the capacity to calm the Lord down, even she said, I don't want to mess with Narsingadev right now. He's very, very angry. And the anger is because his devotee has been tortured constantly. And so this is like the climax. The Lord has appeared, killed Hiranyakashipu. And so no one else was able to pacify except they found that Prahlad can do it. So this, for the next few verses, it's the unfolding of how Prahlad Maharaj is nudged towards Narsingadev. And from verse 8 onwards, massive drops of nectar as Prahlad will start to speak. And something to prepare and notice is that his prayer begins with a long explanation of or expression of his humility. Every word in those first few verses are just fantastic as a little boy, but his humility is so deep. And he begins to speak. So it's described that that's the best way to approach the Lord. In whatever condition of we are in, when we come in front of the Lord, the easiest way to get his attention is to be, is to have expressions of humility. Who am I? Why should you pay any attention to me anyway? What is it that I have done by which, you know, I deserve your attention? I haven't done anything. In fact, I've done everything by which you have every right to neglect me. I've done everything which completely justifies you neglecting me. But I've been told by the great personalities that there is no other option than to approach your lotus feet. So here I am. And that's exactly the mode in which Prahlad begins his prayers. So in the purport, Prabhupada starts with Narottam Das Thakur, who says that anger has its place and it is to be expressed to those who are envious of the devotees. Bhakta Diveshi Jane. So those who are envious towards devotees, it is okay to express anger. Now, all we need is that opportunity, and we're happy to dish it out to others. So it's described how to do it. The best way to express the anger, if we have the spiritual condition of heart, is to say something in response. So here's a pastime of Srila Prabhupada, of how our founder Acharya did it. Of course, there are other ways he's done it. This is one pastime. Srila Prabhupada was invited to be one of the speakers on a panel on a particular topic of the Bhagavad Gita. And the program was organized by Mayavadis. And there was one particular Mayavadi who was like the main guy. So Srila Prabhupada went and he saw that the stage was set very nicely. And for all the members on the panel, there were normal chairs. And on this side of the stage was a big Vyasasana, like this. That was actually reserved for the Mayavadi because he was the one who organized this program. So the guests had come and sat in the different chairs. Prabhupada walked and went and sat on that big chair. So the organizers were a little, Swamiji, can you please? Prabhupada just sat like that, won't move. So they said, all right, we'll just get our guy to sit on the normal chair. Then Prabhupada's turn came. Prabhupada, in a very thunderous, wonderful way, spoke about Krishna being a person, naturally. The Bhagavad Gita is being spoken about. So after Prabhupada's part was over, the mic was given to the Mayavadi and he began speaking totally horrendous. There is no God, there's no personality, it's all Brahman, you know, the usual thing. It's described that Prabhupada's lower lip started quivering with anger. And right in the middle of his speech, Prabhupada looked at his devotees and said, start kirtan. And loudly started chanting Hare Krishna and completely botched his lecture. They became very, very disturbed, but it didn't matter to Prabhupada. Because what mattered was, he cannot tolerate the blasphemy of Krishna. Prabhupada said, if someone told you your mother or father doesn't have a face, doesn't have hands, doesn't have legs, cannot hear you, how do you feel? This is terrible. Krishna is a person, like that. We should be able to defeat, our anger is to be expressed that we're able to defeat someone philosophically and set it right. If we cannot do that because we don't know how to express our anger, because we get carried away by our anger, then it's described that we should politely but surely disagree and say, I'm sorry, that is not my understanding of the Bhagavad Gita. And if we cannot even do that, then it's described that we get up and leave the place. That is the way to express. Any level, these are different grades of anger. If we can do it that level, like Prabhupada did it, we think we can, but generally not good to imitate. But if we can, great. Otherwise, defeat. Otherwise, object. Otherwise, just leave. These are all grades of expression of anger towards the blasphemy of Krishna or his devotees. Then, purport Prabhupada says that all six, such as lust, anger, greed, illusion, pride, and envy, all have their proper use for the Supreme Personality of Godhead and his devotee. So I'm going to ask you, how is lust properly used for Krishna? What do you think? I'm sure you know the answer. Is there a mic for other devotees? How is lust used in Krishna's service? What do you think, Justin? Lusting to go to Mangal Arati? That's a sure failure.
Desire to satisfy the senses of Krishna.
Yeah, lust is this intense desire to satisfy our own senses. So within that is this eagerness, this very strong desire. If the object is Krishna, then that lust has, they're constantly eager, how can I please Krishna? What can I do to please Krishna? What can I do to please the devotees? That way, that is the transformation of lust. Okay? Anger, we talked about. Greed. What is greed? How do you define greed? How would you define greed? Wanting more than necessary? Okay, any other way? So you're all sages, since you don't know this, you don't know what these six are, it's a little difficult for you. So, what do you think? How would you define greed? No definition, greed at all. I know. Go on. Take a guess. Take a wild guess, if nothing else. Just humor me.
Well, lust was the intense desire to satisfy the senses. So I think greed is just an intense desire to have. I mean, it's like the same thing. It's just to have things. And greed is to have something.
Greed is, in one sense, described as... Yeah, go ahead. I don't want to...
I guess a desire to have Krishna all to ourselves.
Krishna all to ourselves?
Yeah.
Oh. Okay, that's not our philosophy, but that's a nice one. It's not our philosophy. You have a definition of? Of greed. Okay, go ahead, read it.
Greed, intense and selfish desire for something, especially wealth, power, or food.
Okay. The way our colloquially we understand the difference between lust and greed, if you will. Lust is this intense desire to constantly have something. And greed is that by which how much ever comes, one never feels satisfied. Greed has to do with not being satisfied. Lust is just the intensity, more and more and more. And greed is that never gets satisfied. Therefore it's said that a greedy person is never satisfied. And the opposite of greed is satisfaction. A devotee is taught to be satisfied with whatever Krishna has provided. That way the greed is addressed. So greed used in Krishna's service means to never be satisfied with what we have offered to Krishna. To always look for, no, that's not enough. Let me see how I can improve in my service to Krishna. Not say, I offered him something, it's all right, we did it. If that's what the book says, we did it according to the book, and we're done. Greed is this, I'm not satisfied, I can always improve the quality even better. I can improve the quality of my sadhana even better. I can improve the quality of my interactions even better, etc., etc. Okay, illusion. How can illusion be used in Krishna's service? It says, illusion, all have their proper use for the Supreme Personality of Godhead and His devotees.
Maybe yoga maya, forgetting Krishna's identity as personality.
Yeah, in the 10th canto, thank you. In the 10th canto, the devotees who are giving the commentaries have written that everyone is under illusion. The pure devotees in Vrindavan, they are under illusion. The conditioned soul rotting in the material world is also under illusion. But what feature of illusion affects them? That's important to know. The pure devotee, like Mother Yashoda or the conjugal associates of Lord Krishna, they are all in illusion that they have no idea that Krishna is the Supreme Personality of Godhead. They see him as a dear friend, a dear lover, a very lovable child, friend, etc. That's their illusion. Coming up in by next week is Kartik month, where this pastime of binding of Krishna, Krishna relieving Nalakuvara and Manigriva, and because he was stealing butter, Mother Yashoda chastising him with a stick. Like, none of us has the courage to stand in front of Kishore and better eat your prasadam. Can't. We don't have that. I mean, some foolish person can say. There is a different kind of illusion. But for them it's very lovable. When the two trees were broken, and Nanda Maharaj asked, what happened? How did these two trees fall? All the boys said, we saw it was Krishna. And they all laughed. Oh, okay, little boys. They're making up stories. My Krishna. The little baby was crawling on his fours. So illusion is to go beyond the formalities and try to develop loving feelings for Krishna. Of course, this cannot be artificially done, but this is our path. It will come. Pride. Pride in Krishna's service. What do you think, Manoj?
Pride is to do with boastful of our achievements. So, not sure how.
Okay. Anyone else? What has pride got to do with it? It's a sense of identity. Proud to be American. Proud to be an employee of such and such organization. Proud to be whatever, right? I identify myself as belonging to a certain organization, a country, whatever. The winning team, the Cubs, and I'm not so much familiar with what's going on in baseball, but or football, Bears and Cubs. But suppose the Cubs are winning, we're Chicago ones, go Cubs, that's our pride. It's a sense of identification with someone or something. So pride, Prabhupada has said, a pride for being a devotee means I am part of Krishna's family. It's part of my pride. Not in a boastful manner, but I'm very honored. I'm very, very honored to be part of Krishna's family.
to be part of Prabhupada's family. This is a great honor. And I'm proud to be a devotee. And how do we express that pride? Someone expresses their pride by being loud and everyone should be able to notice. So we express that pride by putting on Vaishnava cloth, tilak, sikha, out in the public. Oh. If you're not proud to be a devotee, we would hide it. Put on a hat, no tilak, hide all the kantimala. Are you a devotee? But this is sign of pride. I am a Vaishnava. Of course, along with that is responsibility. But these are signs. I belong to Krishna's family. This is why, at least in the, I'm going to use the word Hindu, but technically Vedic system, every person is associated with a particular, what they say gotra. Gotra means it identifies their lineage. If someone says, I am such and such Kennedy, we say, oh, they're the Kennedys, right? They're the Rothschilds. So there's a gotra. I belong to Gautama Rishi. I belong to such and such Rishi. I belong to that Rishi. And they recite this one, this one, this one, all these great personalities. Ambarisha, Angirasa, like that. So this gotra is a way of identifying which lineage a person is born in. And it's described that once a person takes initiation, they change their gotra. They don't identify anymore with, oh, I'm in this such and such wonderful Brahman, this one, that line, this line. It says that all devotees belong to Achyuta Gotra. Achyuta Gotra means we're directly in the family of Krishna. Of course, in the colloquial sense, most of the time in India, if you go now, and they ask you at a temple, what gotra do you belong to? Because when they have to offer the puja in your name, they will ask you, what gotra do you belong to? And if you say Achyuta Gotra, mostly they think of people as orphans. Because orphans don't belong anywhere, right? They don't know. They're called Achyuta Gotra. They all belong to Vishnu. So we're happy to be orphans, no problem. But we all belong to Achyuta Gotra. So ISKCON devotees know this. Oh, I belong to Achyuta Gotra. I belong to Lord Vishnu. So in Jagannath Puri temple, they say that non-Hindus are not allowed. Some of our devotees, were ISKCON devotees, were not allowed inside. And one of the ways they test, of course, many of you will not pass the test because skin color is already the indicator. But there are some of us who have fair skin or Hindus, but sometimes it's questionable. So they'll stop at the door and ask you, what gotra do you belong to? And as soon as they say, Achyuta Gotra, they say, stand aside. You cannot get in. You cannot get in. Our own devotees, Rajiv's sister, Neha. Now she has Indian genes in her. Family is from India, but she has light eyes, I think, and fair skinned. So when she came to Jagannath Puri at the gate, they said, sorry, you cannot enter. She said, no, my parents are Indian. Nope. The mother and father came. No, she's our daughter. They asked her something to say in Hindi. She couldn't speak Hindi. They said, oh, you're not Hindu, you cannot get in. She was not allowed. Shruti was also not allowed. And Sri Vallabha Prabhu came and said, I am Telugu speaking, I'm from this Brahmin class, this is my gotra. I said, I'm sorry, you cannot go. He had to somehow show his passport, something to get her in. I forget the details. But it was quite an interesting situation. And they will look. They know how to identify. Yeah, best thing is to not speak. Once we try to get Murari Prabhu into Jagannath Puri temple, because he has the color that's fairly Indian looking, except he has nice curly hair, so he was asked to cover his head and told him, do not speak anything. Just your skin color should be able to get you through somewhere. And he's a big Jagannath fan. So he walked in at the gate. I think no one stopped him. And he went in, I think. I have to remember the details, so I may be conveying wrong details. But something, he almost entered. And at that time, he used to have the craze of filming everything. I don't know if you know Murari previously. Now he's not so much. But he was obsessed with cameras. He would take, if you see on his computer, there are about 6 million pictures of Jagannath. Same picture, like this, this color, that, every dress, Jagannath, Jagannath. He's like so obsessed with Jagannath. And so he entered, and something happened. I think he liked the temple. He took out his camera and said, hey, that's cool, or something. Right? Checked out. Of course, at that time, they were not so heavy-handed. Now they shut down Jagannath temple because you've contaminated the temple. They'll wash it, they'll clean it, and open it the next day. They're very, very so stringent, so close-minded, unfortunately. But that's Lord Jagannath's system, and so the devotees are always eager to see him. Even more eager, you remember? Lust and greed, they're not satisfied. They're more and more eager to see Lord Jagannath. He intensifies those feelings for him. Okay. And envy. How can envy? Rafiq, your statement, I want Krishna all to myself. Envy, by definition, means not being satisfied with what another person has. I'm not happy with what they have. I want more. And so this is a little tricky, how to use in Krishna's service. It's very, very tricky. It requires expert guidance. But generally, it means the opposite of it, that more and more we want someone else to receive Krishna's mercy more than we are receiving. Because it's in one sense the antidote. I want Krishna to give that devotee mercy. And this is why, Srimati Radharani, she expresses mana, envy sometimes called man lila, where she gets angry in a way that it actually intensifies Krishna's love for her. She closes the door. She will not allow him to come and speak with him, etc., etc., because she is angry that he was with Chandravali's group. And so Krishna is, no, I have to appease Srimati Radharani. I have to beg for forgiveness, etc. Generally, we practice the antidote of envy. It's called respect. Or that others should have more. There's a beautiful pastime where Krishna and Radharani were swinging. Oh, there he is. They're swinging together. Please sit down. We want to hear from you something after I finish this. We were just referring to you. Yeah, sit down. So there's a pastime where Krishna is swinging with Srimati Radharani. It is described that Krishna swings the swing higher and higher to scary heights. So as it goes on higher and higher, Srimati Radharani is clasping onto Krishna's arm very tightly. So Krishna likes it. And it is fantastic. So he does it even more, and she's holding onto his hand very tightly. Then she asks for the swing to be stopped. She gets off the swing and she makes Lalita sit. Then she makes Vishakha and all the other gopis sit. Because it's so thrilling, Krishna is very pleased. And in her mind, not only me, others should also enjoy with Krishna. So that's very high, because generally our conditioned nature is we feel the more it comes to me, the happier I am. But the spiritual mentality is the more it goes to others, the happier I am. And that's the mood of Srimati Radharani actually. That she never keeps all of that mercy to herself. She's very eager to distribute as much as possible, as much as she can to others. That is very attracting to Krishna. And therefore it's in line of being the servant of the servant of the servant. Because we want others to come first. No, first you, first you. In the material world, it's always first me, first me. So I have a friend who quoted that in the material sense, every person wants to be the boss on a boss. He wants to be the boss of the boss. And in devotional sense, you want to be das anudas, the servant of the servant. Because boss anubas, Krishna doesn't pay attention. He doesn't care. Servant of the servant, Krishna cares. He's very attracted by that. Any questions, comments? Yeah, I'm going to get to Murari. You have something? After Murari, we were recounting, perhaps not fully accurately, and so Jagannath sent you here. Can you tell us of your experience in Jagannath Puri when you tried to get into the temple? Did you try to get into the temple?
Yes.
Yes, so can you please? I may have given erroneous details.
Well, my first trip to Orissa, I went with two other devotees, Mother Prima Tarangana and her husband.
That's
was their guest for a while in India. And, well, I was so excited about going into this temple because it's huge. And my heart is with Jagannath, so I really wanted to be there to see Lord Jagannath in his home place. This is kind of embarrassing. Unfortunately, in India, they have these rules.
Right.
And they're not too favorable towards Westerners. And it doesn't matter if you're wearing
saffron. It's not just Westerners, non-Hindus, basically.
Yeah.
If you're not Hindu, you can get in.
And it doesn't matter if you're wearing saffron. You can't go in because they don't trust Westerners. They think we're unclean. So I didn't know about that. And there was a sign over the door, the entrance, Indians only. Well, that brought up a lot of bad memories from the civil rights movement, the whole thing. I think most of you can identify with that. I was really shocked. I was never told. So my friends, they were able to go in. And there I am standing outside the main doorway. And I was really hurt. I was really hurt. I mean, who wouldn't be? Some of us can identify with the hurt a little bit more than others, right? And I asked Lord Jagannath, you know, I said, Lord Jagannath, I've traveled over 3,000 miles to see you. I don't understand this, you know, to get stopped right at the door. I was really, really sad down in the dumps because I said, why did I even, you know, 18-hour plane ride and all that stuff, you know? I came here for you, not anything else. And then something very transcendental happened. it was like hearing a voice, and it just says, I also have traveled to see you, and I've also made you my pujari. And you serve me every day on the altar. And I was so taken back by that, because it sounded as if Jagannath had really spoken to me. He heard my anguish prayer, whatever. And suddenly all the sorrow and the disappointment just melted away. And I was almost walking on air from that moment on. And I understood that Jagannath is everywhere, and he's in everybody's heart, you know. And these silly little rules that people make up, you know, don't matter a bit. So that
did you try to get in?
Yes, I tried. Well, my second trip to Orissa, to the temple, they were sneaking people in. You know, where there's a will, there is a way. And there were some guards at night for the final ritual or whatever, putting Jagannath to bed and stuff, that some of the guards were very lenient. They understood that there were devotees coming all and blah, blah, blah. And if we dressed up and didn't say anything, you know, with a, you know, and don't speak a word, just nod your head if you're ever spoken to, you could get in. And so some of the other Indian devotees that I was with, they said, come on, come on. They're going to let us in around 10 o'clock at night. And I was kind of so excited. But you see, my spiritual master, Ramapada Swami, they wouldn't let him in. And I really felt bad about that, because I said, how could I go in and take darshan of Lord Jagannath, this moment of is very auspicious and everything, when my spiritual master can't do that, you know? I felt like, I can't go in there. I mean, I can't do it. If my spiritual master can't do it, I certainly don't deserve to do it. And I know it might have been an invitation of a lifetime, and Jagannath or not Jagannath, I just said, I'm sorry, Jagannath, but I can't do it because my spiritual master can't do it. And I passed up that opportunity. And I don't think I ever told Rompa Swami about this either.
No, thank you for setting the details straight. I had heard a different story.
What did,
that
did you
tried to sneak in and they did not allow you to get in.
No, I never did.
Okay, good.
Never,
thank you for clarifying.
I decided to go.
I'm sorry for narrating wrong details then. I'm glad you came in. I was like, I'm okay.
Glad to share this with you.
All right. Any other questions, comments? Thank you, Murari.
Hey, Krishna Prabhu.
Hare Krishna.
Very glad to see you back.
I'm happy to see you too.
I have a question about the pride.
Pride.
When we put tilak and claws, I don't know if it comes naturally, or but who doesn't wear tilak and claws? You kind of, you know, prouder than them, or I don't know.
Who does not wear?
Yeah, I mean, he's not a devotee, and you are proud that you are a devotee.
Sometimes devotees are embarrassed or shy or something to be in public, to be seen in public like that.
Yeah, that's true.
So, it's part of the inner, I am a devotee of Krishna. It's not, I'm not a closet devotee. Inside the house, I'll put it all on. If I have to step outside, I'm worried what others will think or something like that. Of course, there are circumstances where it's understandable, but in general, I know devotees who are shy. I will not put on tilak, or it's a little embarrassing or odd or weird. What will others think of me? Suddenly I'll catch the attention of everyone.
I think when there is one devotee and like 100 people, they are not devotees, then this is when he might feel shy. But when there are 100 devotees and a couple people that are not devotees, I think that the mood is kind of...
It's easier, not necessary. It's easier. When I first started putting on tilak and coming to programs, go for Harinam, Even in the Harinam, I could not dance or be with the devotees. It was always like, I don't want to be, because I was in the downtown area, and I didn't want anyone to see me like that. Of course, later things changed, but it's the initial phases where it's a little immature. It's easier with others, no doubt. If 20 others are doing it, it's easier. But sometimes people have a big step to take, to actually be in public with tilak and dhoti.
One more question about the anger. If not applying it in devotional service, like more mundane, I just heard a different opinion how to deal with anger.
Yeah.
If somebody's anger, so one I heard that you should just ignore that person, like do nothing, because you can't pacify. And then it says, just the word itself, ignore, it's like ignorance by doing that, ignoring that person. Maybe you can give us advice how to deal with anger when people are angry.
How to deal with our anger or someone else's anger?
Someone's
anger. Generally, anger is like fire. It tends to spread. So when someone's angry at us, or they're angry, if we are not careful, we get sucked into that energy. So first is important is to not get sucked in. Second, it's nicer to see, I have a whole PowerPoint presentation on overcoming anger, which we do in universities. And one of the things I've learned is anger is actually an expression of something, right? What is anger an expression of? Lust, according to Bhagavad Gita, that's correct. We use the word lust, but in simple English, not getting something. One's expectations have not been met. When one's expectations are not met, they feel some sort of pain. So anger is an expression of pain, actually. You peel the layers, it's an expression of pain. And what is the pain an expression of? It's an absence of love. So when a person doesn't feel love, or they don't know how to access love, that pain is expressed as anger. It's a very powerful thing. In general, so one should learn how to deliver that love. One should learn how to make that person access love.
I'm sorry, just clarifying.
No, go ahead. I want to say something from Bhagavad Gita's perspective. Go ahead.
So can we try to deliver that love right there in that situation, or like you're saying, generally?
I'll ask you the question. If, let's say, there is a small fire and there is a whole building burning, how do we decide which fire I can put out and which fire I cannot put out? Yeah. Depends on my capacity. Small fire? Psh, no problem. A whole building on fire? I can't. I don't have. If I'm equipped, if I'm a firefighter, maybe I can. So our ability to deliver love or affection to someone depends on our own capacity of how much we are receiving first. To that degree, we can give, and we should try. If we can't try, our goal is not that I should be the one delivering it. Our goal should be that they should receive it, wherever it comes from. Okay? And according to Bhagavad Gita, Krishna says that anger, the root cause is the contemplation on the objects of senses. Dhyayato vishayan pumsan. Because by that contemplation, a person develops great attachment. So the slides I have, if someday if we get a chance, I'll show you. The language is different, just because it's a university crowd. But basically it says that if you learn to live with the right expectations from life, your tendency to become angry is reduced. My anger grows when I have wrong expectations or unreal expectations. If I have unreal expectations, my anger will grow. So I need to have real expectations. For example, this material world, if I have the unreal expectation that I will find love here, then I will be frustrated. I will be angry. So I have to learn how the material world operates. So I need the knowledge that, hey, this is not, there's nothing here. So it's the unreal expectations of each other, unreal expectations of the world, unreal expectations of our circumstances that cause anger. Sanjat sanjayate kama, kamat krodho vijayate.
I just thought it was interesting, sometimes we hear that envy...
Envy?
There is no envy. Envy is the one quality that cannot be used in Krishna's service.
Yes, that is also
true.
So do we
hear both ways? Very,
that's why I had... it's there in the purport here. And that's why I had, what's that? Disclaimed. Or there was a disclaimer. This is very tricky. And it's very difficult to be used. No one teaches us this is how you use envy in Krishna's service. Therefore, you mostly deal with the antidote of envy.
And then on the point of anger, sometimes because of the false ego, rather than, well, naturally one can become upset if one blasphemes the Lord or his devotee, but because of there's a false ego or the vanity of thinking that I'm a devotee,
yes.
Therefore if someone gets angry at me, I'm thinking, well, you shouldn't get upset at me because I'm a devotee. So...
the tricky part is that for a person who has not crossed the modes of nature, a person is consumed by anger. Anger is more powerful than ourselves. But in the case of those who have transcended the modes of nature, they know how to direct and control anger. They are not consumed by anger. That's the difference. So there's pastimes of Prabhupada. They're absolutely fine. We heard recently, I think Maharaj was here and he explained. You know that pastime? Prabhupada was reviewing the different pictures from the books and suddenly pressed a button under his table. You know that story? Oh. So, Ramapad Maharaj was narrating this. He said, I was sitting this close to Srila Prabhupada, and Prabhupada was spending time with the BBT artists, looking at different pictures, appreciating their art, giving them feedback, correcting it. Just a very, very joyful, loving, sweet exchanges happening. And while he was doing this, he reached under his table and pressed a button that would ring in his servant's room. That was the signal for the servant to come in. And as soon as the servant came in, he had not even paid his obeisances fully. It seems Prabhupada gave him like a major hammer chastisement. Bam! And it was so heavy that Maharaj was saying that I completely blanked out. And imagine being called into a room and just bam. And Prabhupada sent him away, turned around to the devotees, ha ha, laughing, and went through the pictures. And I was like, wow. I mean, that is awesome. Meaning that he's not consumed by the anger. He knows how to use it in that dose for that person. Versus when one is consumed by anger, everyone around them is, don't touch me, I'm in a bad mood, don't come near me. We spread it very happily to everyone. That is being consumed by anger versus knowing how to control anger. So devotees, here it says that can be used in Krishna's service, but we are taught that the first thing to learn about anger is not how to use it, but how to give it up. We have to learn to give it up. When we transcend the modes of nature, then we can learn how to use it in Krishna service. First thing is to learn to not become angry, to learn how to overcome anger. That's the call to action for us. That's the call to action. And that comes mostly anger. If we notice, it is rare that we become upset that Krishna is offended. We become upset that the devotees are offended. That's rare. Our anger mostly is when we are offended. And that's the one that burns us the most. They said something to him, okay, they'll deal with it as a grown-up. I don't have to worry about it. They'll take care of it. Or it doesn't even touch us. But someone says something to us, we go, even the smallest of things. Because that's coming from, as Acharya says, a false ego side, or it's coming from my expectations of myself have not been met by others. Yes, go ahead.
So, how to be in a situation when you see that two devotees and one blaspheme the other one, and you're like getting angry in that situation?
What does blaspheme mean to you? That they're arguing?
Well,
argument is not a blasphemy. They can argue. Okay. That's fine.
Okay, one is yelling to the other one.
One is yelling. That is also okay. It depends what they're yelling to each other. Blasphemy means where their character is being attacked. That's blasphemy. If they say, you don't understand anything, that's a different thing. That's just arguing with each other. You may address that differently versus blasphemy is a little different.
The situation was that one was showing his kind of authority on the other one.
Was the authority official or just showing off?
No, it was official. It wasn't official.
Okay.
And they both were senior. For me, I mean.
Okay.
So, you just stay quiet, that situation. And the other one, he couldn't kind of say something from himself. But he should actually, and he was kind of right.
Okay, so here's the thumb rule. One who is a junior should never, never, never correct a superior. It's not our culture. It's not our culture. But if that is disturbing, then the junior, we can go to our seniors and say, can you please address the situation? But a junior should never, never, never correct a superior. It's not, very rare, very, very rare, but generally not done. But it can be addressed through the seniors. And if one of them is our friends, a peer or a young person, if it's a peer, then either there or later we can intervene and say, perhaps you were overreacting. Or I saw it differently, or I heard it differently. What was it that was bothering you? And help them go through it. With peers, we can happily say, hey, what's going on? Why are you overreacting? It seems like you're overreacting. What was it that was bothering you? And mostly you will see that there are two kinds of anger. One is called primary anger and the other is called secondary anger. Primary anger is a healthy thing to have. Most people will express it. Like you're driving a car, someone cuts you off, and you say, or you hit the horn a little bit or say something, oh, fool. And then it goes away. Right? But secondary anger means where the expression of pain or hurt is disproportionately larger. If a person cuts us off, you chase them, road rage as they call, you chase them, you pull them over, pick out your gun, shoot them or throw something at them then that's an indicator. There's someone who needs attention, I think. Do you know her? Okay. She's with her shoes in. Okay. So that's secondary anger. And mostly, secondary anger is not that situation. It is something deeper. It's trauma that is stored. And so if you notice persons, when they respond in a way that is far bigger, it's like throwing a cannonball to kill a mosquito. That's an indicator there's something else going on. It's not that situation. So to deal with secondary anger is not easy. Yeah? You have more? Okay. Murari? Okay. Oh, Jitendra Prabhu. It's been a while, so I'm extending class. I hope you don't mind.
It says everybody acts according to their nature. What good does repression accomplish?
Yeah.
So
anger is not our nature. It is, so we're saying, why repress it?
Hare Krishna.
Okay, thank you very much. Srila Prabhupada ki jai, Srimad Bhagavatam ki jai. Oh, there is excitement on the first day itself. Haribol. I think so.